Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
I had almost a full day of home brewing yesterday, Mike. I was off for Veterans Day, but my kids and my wife had to go to school. My wife had to go to work, so it was like a lot of solder smoke here at the M0HBR. I've been playing with my 20 meter DSB rig. I did the mod that we talked about with the the crystal resonators, and I have a switch now, so I can switch between one or two of them, and it gives me about 60 kilohertz of wiggle room, which is a big improvement. So now I'm working on the amplifier, a little bit of an afterburner on there, and that's going pretty well too. I'll tell you about that on the next go around. So, have you gotten settled in your return from the trip, and have you been generating any solder smoke at your end? KL7R, M0HBR.
Well, happy Veterans Day there, Bill. I've been doing a little bit, getting settled in here. I started building a PIC-based frequency counter, like the IK30IL, but it was a little bit different. And got it built. It doesn't work, but I got it built. Been playing around with software packages. My logging program, N1 Mike Mike Logger, was acting strangely, and so I got a new version of that and fiddled around with it and had some troubles, and I did that. I don't know if you heard about software defined radio, but been playing around with different SDR programs, software defined radio programs, and stuff like that. I sent a note to the QRP list, like a basic question kind of question, and a direct conversion receiver is really simple in that you don't need any pre-selection to receive a signal. You can just take an antenna and run it right straight into a mixer and put a crystal oscillator or some sort of local oscillator into a mixer, and out comes double sideband, upper sideband, lower sideband, or CW. But it doesn't do too good on AM. You can get Synchrodyne if you perfectly zero beat carrier, but it's really unpleasant to listen to the carrier frequency. So I asked the guys if there was a really simple AM receiver along the lines of a direct conversion receiver that didn't require a preselector like a DC receiver. All it requires is a local oscillator and no preselection, no tuned circuit. And I got back some incomprehensible replies, but anyway, playing with the SDR radio, I was able to hitch the this SDR software to the output of direct conversion receiver and get and it will decode AM as you sweep through the frequency of an AM signal, and if you tuned up and down in frequency, it didn't change the pitch of the decoded signal. Anyway, it's kind of interesting, and lot to learn there for me. That was kind of long-winded. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Well, yeah. I've been watching this business about the software-defined radio. I get the Homebrewer magazine now in CD form. And at first I was kind of disappointed that they were putting it on CD, but then you realize that you're getting about 500 or 600 pages of stuff that you just wouldn't get that in conventional form. I saw all the articles in there about software defined radio, But I think I'm going to stick to being an analog hardware guy, Mike. I think that's going to be my niche. Everybody else will be playing with microchips, and I'll be still playing with individual 2N222 transistors. Matter of fact, I saw a circuit in experimental methods in RF design where you could homebrew your own NE602 chip, your own Gilbert cell mixer, using discrete components. And it's a bad sign, but I found that very interesting and attractive. It shows you where my technical head is at right now. But I've seen the software-defined radio. In terms of your AM receiver, I think probably the answer is what they would call a TRF receiver, a tuned RF receiver. And all that is you get RF amplifiers at the desired operating frequency. They're tuned at the in a range that you want, and then you have a little diode detector, and you do it that way. Now, it's a pain in the neck because when you tune the thing, you have to tune each of the RF stages, and that's why I think the old Atwater Kents and radios like that had so many knobs on them that you had to tune. You had to basically tune each of the tuned amplifiers there. And then you just goes from the tuned RF amplifiers to a detector, could be a diode, and then audio amplifiers. And it should be a great way to listen to AM. Very good, especially if you're just listening to one frequency or the broadcast, say the broadcast frequency range. That's fine. And then, of course, AM sounds fine on superheads. Turn off the BFO. But, of course, you get into much more complicated stuff there. But you might want to just look into it. Basically, just think of it as a crystal radio with an RF amp in front of it. And then they call it, tuned RF, TRF receiver. I mentioned experimental methods in RF design. When I first got this book, I wasn't really that crazy about it. And I was much more attached to my old solid-state design for the radio amateur, its predecessor. But lately, I've been lugging this thing with me to work and reading it on the bus and at lunchtime. And it's really good. There's all kinds of great stuff in there. And I've learned a lot just carrying this thing around for the last couple of weeks. So that's been my kind of homebrew reading, which is, as we know, an important part of being a homebrewer. So I just wanted to mention that. And yesterday, Veterans Day, we had a good... happy Veterans Day to you, by the way. We had a good experience because the GQRP Club has I didn't know this, but they have a net on 40 meters every day at 11 a.m. And it's designed mostly for, of course, for UK radio amateurs. But it's on phone. So at 11 o'clock, I fired up my 40-meter homebrew double sideband rig and checked into the net, and it was great fun. I talked to the QRPers all over the UK, and it's getting a lot of check-ins. And if you take a look at the UK the GQRP list, there's all kinds of discussions about that. People are very, very pleased with it. So I'm going to try to check in again today. It's a shame to do it at 11 o'clock. It kind of interferes with the schedule of the not retired element, the not retired minority. let's see what else. One other thing I was going to mention. Oh, a website, Hackaday. Have you been checking out Hackaday? I love that website. It's just exactly what the name indicates. One technical hack every day. And a few weeks ago, I sent them something. I told them. I suggested that they put my kite aerial photography page on the Hackaday site, and they did. And man, it generated hundreds and hundreds of hits on the website. It was great fun. People all over the world were looking at my kite aerial photography hack. KL7R M0HBR.
That's awesome. M0HBR KL7R. Wow, that's quite a lot of activity there, Bill. And cool on the 40 meter net that you can check into. Yeah, I've looked at some of your kite aerial photography stuff. You got a couple of good ideas there, and it's kind of fun to imagine doing the same sort of thing. I got a friend who's into stereo photography, and it's kind of along the same lines. He's hacked a couple of digital cameras and put them together, glued two digital cameras together, and with a single trigger, and it's like a single control controls both, and he takes all kinds of cool stereo pictures. But I think of remote controlled cameras, and your website had that in there. Yeah, I like Hackaday. You pointed me to it early on, and I check it periodically. But no, I didn't see your stuff. That's great. Let's see, you had a bunch of stuff here. Yeah, TRF. That's the bad thing. See, TRF receiver. You have to have a tuned circuit, a selective, some RF selective tuned circuit, and amplifiers before your detector. And with a DC receiver, you don't need any selectivity at all. All you need is a local oscillator. And it just seemed to me there's got to be some way to basically take a DC receiver and make it sound nice. Get rid of the carrier and the changing pitch as you swing through an AM signal. And it kind of worked with SD Radio. You might download a copy of SD Radio and put it on your PC there and listen to a DC receiver, a real wide DC receiver, one that has almost no audio selectivity. It's kind of fun to play with. You can use the computer as an IF, and a lot of those things are discussed in experimental methods, so I got a lot to learn there. But anyway, that's what I was on to. And finally, on the Gilbert Cell NE602, I started to do that. I started building. I was going to build a. This was before I went on vacation. I started working on a receiver, and I started with an NE602, and it wasn't an NE602. It was like an LM30, whatever that is. The earlier mixers, like they have in Argonauts, and it basically is just free transistors in a Gilbert cell. And I had so much trouble making that work. I almost timed out there, so I unkeyed there for a second. But anyway, I had so much trouble making just the basic NE602 type receiver work. I did make a three transistor replacement for this. What is it? LM301 or something like that? LM3. I forget what that is. Anyway, you had a lot of stuff going on there, Bill. I don't know if I answered all of it there. M0HBR, back to you. KL7R.
KL7R. M0HBR. Okay, micro, good. Well, on the TRF, here's an idea. Why don't you just do like a real broadband RF amplifier. Not tuned, just real broadband. You know, you could do it any way you want, but there's this chip out there, you call it a MAR chip, that is a real broadband RF amp. You just do broadband amp in front of a diode detector, and then you'd have, I guess, the equivalent of the kind of DC receiver that you've been talking about, but without the carrier problem. Better to do it. I mean, you get audio out, and then I guess you could play with it, then run it right into the software. I think that might solve your problem. Talking about 602s, I actually blew one up yesterday. I've done this before. I think I told you. They're not hard to blow up. I think any kind of voltage transients or anything like that will destroy them. And yesterday I was working on this my 20-meter DSB rig, and actually working on getting the amplifier, the outboard amplifier going with it. And I was struggling with the transmitter. I'll tell you about that in a minute, but I finally got the transmitter and the amplifier under control, and I said, okay, great, let me sit down now, let's see if I can work somebody with this thing. I put on the headphones and the receiver, not quite dead, but certainly deaf. And it's a real simple thing. It's the receiver is just, it's like three NE602 chips and one LM386. It uses the NE602 as an RF amp. Then there's a second NE602 that is the typical mixer. There's a third NE602. I think, is that right? I think I'm even using the third NE602 as an audio amplifier. And then there's an LM386 to drive the speaker. But it's real simple. You can use these things as amplifiers if you set the bias right. Dead as a doornail. And I just looked at it and I said, I know that that front end NE602 is gone. Replacing these things when they're built dead bug style is not easy. And if I have them glued to the PC board, and you got these all these little tiny wires going up onto the legs of the dead bug, so I had to do an NE602ectomy. I got that squared away. Tell you about the RF amplifier. It's interesting. It's just a single switching MOSFET. You know, you've seen a lot of these circuits with the IRF 510s. This one's a little bit different. It's MPE 3055. It's basically the same kind of thing. It's a more advanced version of the MOSFET that comes with the Ramsey amps. But they're real, not real hard to get it going right. But you gotta really play with two things. You gotta play with the drive level, and you gotta play with the bias setting. And I think I figured out a way to get it right. First of all, it's pretty easy to figure out, you know, how much you have to reduce the drive quite a bit. They don't take too much to drive. And you got to just figure out how much you can drive it without sending it into, without overdriving it, sending it into distortion. So once you get that right, then you got to play with the bias setting on it. And what I did was I just would look at the scope. And turn the drive through from like the maximum amount of drive I wanted to give it down to zero, and watch the output, and sort of just fiddle with the bias setting until I got clean distortion-free output all the way through the full range of the drive from max drive down to zero, and that seemed to do it. I'm getting about 15 watts out of the thing now, which is it's got over 20 dB of gain. Which sounds reasonable. Anyway, that was my homebrewing adventure yesterday. KL7R, M0HBR.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah, I've read about using IRF 510s, and I've read about using other switching transistors for amps, and they always say that input capacitance is a really hard thing to deal with. And it turns out the IRF 510 just happens to have very low input capacitance. So if this is 20 meters, maybe you're getting by with it, or maybe you had to do something specific to, maybe you added some inductance to counteract that input capacitance, and I'd be interested in that. And cool on your NE602 rig there. That sounds pretty cool. Yeah, I was reading about NE602s that they have an amp, they have a mixer, they have a local oscillator all in one chip. So kind of an interesting chip. I found a circuit out there that makes an LM386 have 70 odd dB of gain, and so you can come right off a mixer into an LM386 without an intermediate audio preamp. So I don't know if you've seen that. It's by a Japanese ham out there. It has a bunch of hand-drawn circuits that are fairly amazing. As far as the TRF, that's the thing I was talking about, where you've got a 350 picofarad tuning capacitor for AM, and you for an AM receiver, that would be part of a tuned circuit to selectively to select which station you wanted to listen to for AM, and then you would detect it with an audio with a diode detector. But with DC, you would use the same capacitor as part of a VFO and a local oscillator injector, and it just seemed to me that there's got to be some way to where you don't have to completely rewire a circuit to use the same knob to get AM or double sideband. but maybe I was asking for too much there. One fellow said that you could, if you had heterodyne, you could phase lock your BFO to the local oscillator, and then you could re-inject the carrier later. It was more than my brain could handle. But anyway, I was just looking for something simple, and I got mathematics back, and it may not be simple. Huh. Let's see. So tell me how you handled the input capacitance of the MPE-3055, M0HBR, KL7R.
It doesn't seem to be a problem, though. It doesn't. It seems to work fine. They're using these transistors, like I said, in the Ramsey amp, and they're really cheap. It's great. I bought a bag of 20 of them. they're like 50 cents each. I tell people when I'm working that they're I think they're even cheaper than that. I think they're 25 cents each. So I tell them, like, you know, if I blow my finals, it's a 50 cents replacement cost, and they get a kick out of that. I have this I bought the Ramsey amp, you know, these little RF amplifiers. I bought the 20 meter version and changed the filter on it for 40, and that's what I have on the 40 meter rig. And I have it sitting next to the transmitter with a switch that I've labeled QRO and QRP. In the QRO position, it puts out about, I guess, 20, 25 watts. In the QRP position, it puts out, 4 or 5. So I get a kick out of saying, you know, stand by, old man, while I kick in the linear. And it doesn't quite give the kerchunk that you get with a real linear, but if I carry his thrills, you know. But I don't think the input capacitance is a real issue here on this thing. And this one was a more advanced version of the transistor sister used. I think it's MP3055. And I got the V version because it's got a little bit better thermal stability. And, but it works fine. And I'm surprised. It's being used quite a bit, but I'm surprised it's not being used even more, given the simplicity of the circuit. It's real, real simple. The RF goes into the gate, there's a little bit of a feedback network going there, but not much. You got a transformer at the input, a transformer at the output, and you bias it. There's a little bias circuit there. You got to watch that. You got to set that right, because you get too much juice going through it. It eats up too much, and you got to find that kind of sweet spot there where it's in the linear range. And it does jump. The amount of current you got going through it does change a little bit as it heats up. And I think some purists don't like that at all. But I think it's if you put a good heat sink on it, you can live with it. And also, you can do the trick about putting the diode right up against the transistor, so that as the thing heats up, the bias changes with it. Yeah, there's all kinds of things you can do with it. But mine works great on 40. And plus specs are good for this thing to work pretty well on 20. The one on 40 meters, there's two of them in there, and in it's kind of two of them. The one I'm working on right now is just one transistor, so a lot less, half the output, of course. Let's see. Yeah, the 602 chips are really interesting. I don't know if you know, but they're this might be a bit of a ham radio urban legend, but I think it's true. I think that they were originally used as the 49 megahertz IF for old cell phones. I think that's where they got their start. They're getting a little bit harder to find now. You can get them in surface mount version. I have some surface mount NE602s here, but I haven't even thought about using them. I have a tough enough time with the big, the regular old version with real leads coming off. It's hard enough to work with those, so I haven't even thought about working with the big bug version, but I have a few of them sitting here. And I know the Japanese site that you're working on, I think it's JF10ZL. It's an amazing site with all the hand-drawn diagrams. The guy is brilliant. He really is brilliant. And has a great way of explaining things. And it's amazing because he's explaining these really technical things across this huge linguistic divide, but he still does it better than most people who try to explain it in English. Think about that. So he's great. I got to talk to him because he had a link to my old site on his site. And I got to tell him that I've kind of moved my website. My website has moved from Portugal to the United States. The Portuguese site is still up, but now it's on the QSL.net server in the States. Here are a couple other things. Through Hackaday, they had a site there, I don't know if you saw it, measuring bullet speed with Audacity, with the Audacity audio program. I think we were playing with Audacity as part of Solder Smoke. Oh, and by the way, are you recording? Are we on the air here? But he used Audacity to measure bullet speed, which I thought was pretty cool. There was also a great link there a little while back on this kid out in California who was putting together his own high-altitude balloon system, transmitting telemetry and GPS data and taking all kinds of pictures. But a really great site where he described his adventure of putting this thing together. Kid is really, really smart. That's it. Let me turn it back over to you, Mike. KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, M0HBR, KL7R. Wow. Yeah, I'm recording. I haven't done it in a while, so I don't know if it's going to work. But I pushed the button, and we'll see what happens there. Cool on Audacity for bullet speed. I'll have to look at that. I'm trying to. I guess. How would you do that? You'd have to record the sound, and then record the Doppler. But the Doppler would be at the speed of sound. Yeah, I'd have to think about that a minute. Maybe he's got multiple audio recorders or something like that. And two mics. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that makes sense. Let's see. You were talking about NASA balloons, and I was just watching the NASA channel on TV here, and I thought it was really weird because they were showing a crossband 440 and 2 meter repeater on the NASA channel. I said, "What's going on here? That's ham radio." And what it was some kids or some guys had put up a balloon and put a repeater in the balloon, and NASA had it. Find on a kid doing the same thing. I don't know if I told you about the group of kids that were doing Wi-Fi and did 125 mile 802.11 Wi-Fi unamplified receive and unamplified transmit for 125 miles. I mean, I have a hard time reaching my living room. Let's see. Oh, and fine on your amp getting 25 watts and 15 watts. That's awesome. I was thinking I would like to have a recording of an old dynamotor. Remember those things that went I think it would be awesome to have that sound around the shack so I could say, wait a second, I need to kick on my QRP amp and and kicking the old dynamotor sound. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, KL7R, M0HBR. You know, I was just having similar thoughts here this morning on, you know, the guys who use Echolink but then kind of complain about it because it's not like real radio. You know, I was thinking we could probably work up all kinds of gizmos between the operator and the computer to make it seem that way. Instead of little computer mics, you could have a, you know, rig it up so you could use a D104 with Echolink. And, you know, I hadn't thought about the dynamotor thing, but that would be good. You could have the dynamotor effect. I was just thinking about, you know, when you throw the switch from transmit to receive, you could actually come up with a box and have a little switch, you know, a TR switch like in the old days, and have a whole bunch of big old relays in the thing. You know, they wouldn't do anything, but they would just go, you know, ker-chunk sound when you switched over. You could probably even come up with a... Hey, get this one. You could come up with an effect where the lights would dim a little bit when you went to transmit on Echolink. Yeah, put them in the back of the QST, and you know we could probably sell dozens of them. wouldn't be commercially viable, but there'd be a real kind of weird niche market for that kind of stuff. I remember the Wi-Fi kids. That was great. And the balloon thing. I one of these days I'm going to launch balloons. Mike, one of the balloon articles was written by somebody in the UK, and I was amazed to learn that the UK authorities will allow you to do something like that. I guess I thought it would be prohibited. Most things seem to be prohibited here, especially if they're fun. Bike riding in most parks, for example, is prohibited, as is ball playing on most streets. It's not a real kid-friendly place in some ways. But balloon launching apparently is permitted if you get the authorities if you get the go ahead from the authorities. So there could be some potential here. We were thinking about doing a simpler thing here. You know, my kid came back from a party with a couple of these balloons that they give little kids at party. They don't have much lift, but we toyed with the idea of attaching a glow stick. You know, these little chem lights. Put a couple chem lights on there and get those things, launch those things up. That would be that would create a bit of a sensation over London. I'm sure you did similar stuff as a kid, Mike. But we did that. We discovered as children a way of using the bags that come with clothes from the dry cleaner. You know the bags I'm talking about, the real thin little plastic bags. Well, we discovered a way to make hot air balloons out of these things. You'd use mom's iron to seal up the top, and there's a little bunch of little perforated holes along the top. You use the iron and a bit of cloth to seal that up. Now you have a pretty good envelope. Along the bottom, you get a little light wire. Got to be kind of rigid, but not too heavy. And you make a circle, and that holds the bottom part open. And you take another little wire, and you put it diagonally across the bottom opening. And from that, you suspend some cotton balls soaked in Vaseline. You write that thing up. You got a heat source there. It fills that thing up with hot air real quick. You could also use a Sterno, can of Sterno, to get the thing heated up initially. But the burning cotton ball is enough to keep it going. And I'm telling you, on a fall, winter night, kind of dark night, you launch a few of those things over the neighborhood, and the light from the burning cotton balls makes it look like some sort of weird ghostly heads floating over the neighborhood. You know, we're lucky we didn't burn anybody's house down, but when you did that, so yeah, okay. See, there's a certain kind of craziness that affects all true radio amateurs. You know, this stuff seems somehow to be in our DNA. Yeah, that was a good one. Let's see, I'm looking at my list of things that we talked about. Yeah, Audacity, measuring that, the kid with the balloon. You talked about the technical advice you get from QRPL sometimes. Yeah, that, you know, you ask a simple question and they tell you, phase lock the BFO to the LO and re-inject. Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm sure that sounds easy, but when you try to do it in the real world, no, that's not quite it. KL7R, M0HBR.
Hello, hello. Hey, I'm having a little trouble here, Bill. Hang on a second. My PTC doesn't work. You copying there, Bill, M0HBR or KL7R?
No, I just turned it over to you. And right as you transmitted Balsa and Sterno. I think the timing was perfect. Take it away. KL7R, M0HBR.
Well, I actually heard everything you said. It's just I couldn't press the space bar to make the thing transmit, and so I clicked on the disconnect and I lost you, but you're back there. Anyway, yeah, fine on the I was just going to tell you about the balloons we used to make, and it was basically we didn't seal the tops. We might have put a piece of tape on the top or something like that. But we made a little square out of balsa wood and a little X, and then we put a piece of a little tin aluminum pot in the middle, and we put a chunk of Sterno in there and just ran it off of Sterno. I didn't know about the cotton balls and Vaseline. I'll have to file that one away in the head. But we used to send them up all the time. I remember Anchorage has got a lot of small plane traffic, and my grandfather, we sent one up from his house, and he was right in the approach pattern for one of the for the north south runway of Merrill Field there in Anchorage. We didn't have any trouble though. Another balloon incident. I'm pretty sure I told you this. I'm not sure, but I used to be a contester when I was going to college and in Fairbanks, and buddy and I decided we were going to put up a full size 5/8 wave vertical for 160 meters. So we did that, and we got a couple of weather balloons, and we put up a full-size 5/8 wave vertical for 160, and the base of the vertical was attached to the ground plane of a vertical on top of an 8-story building. So I was up on the roof and with an antenna tuner, when my buddy down 8 floors was telling me, oh yeah, the SWR is coming down. And so we'd load up this antenna and didn't get anything on 160, but we managed to talk to New Zealand on 10 meters, and we were the only guys on 10 meters because the wind was blowing towards New Zealand. We had I don't know how many feet of 20 or 32 gauge magnet wire on this weather balloon, and it shorted against the case of the antenna tuner and burnt off. So we were wondering what a radar signature that might have had as it flew through the glide slope of Fairbanks' landing pattern there. Bill, I better not stay too much longer tonight. Sure good talking with you today, and I'll bolt these two pieces together and make a new solder smoke, and hopefully everybody will get some enjoyment out of this like I do. Tie the ribbons on it if you would. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, KL7R, M0HBR. Oh, it's good. We've covered a lot of territory here, so this should be I hope this will be an interesting one for folks. Yeah, yeah, up on top of the building with the balloon and the wire. Yeah, it and the radar detector, one of the things or a radar reflector, I guess, the kid in California who sent up the balloons was, one of the things he had to do was put a radar reflector on it. And this reminded me of something. A month or so ago, maybe 2 months ago, we were walking through Hyde Park here, and my daughter Maria looked up, and she saw this thing flashing in the sky. And we looked up, and it was obviously some sort of weird kite, but I hadn't seen one of these things before. It's called UFO Sam, and it's not really like a kite. It's just kind of a spinner thing. So I guess it's small. It's about a foot long and maybe 6 inches wide, and the string runs down to the ground, and when it gets in the wind, it starts spinning around. And it generates lift, and up it goes like a kite, but it's not really like a kite. And it flashes. We've got all this reflective material on it. It flashes. So, of course, we followed the string down. At the base of the string, there was a guy in a wheelchair. I went over and started talking to him, and he told me his father had invented the thing. And a real interesting guy, and he told me the story of the of the kite, and how his father had worked for Boeing and had developed the thing, and now people are flying them all over the world. And one of the things they do with it is they put one of the applications was that they would put it in lifeboats, and they would put a radar reflector on it along with the visual light reflectors. And if you were stranded at sea, you'd fly one of these things up there, and hopefully it would help you get detected. So we'll have to include these things, I guess, in our future balloon programs here, Mike. Listen, great talking to you. I'll let you go. This is 7-3 for now, and yeah, solder smoke is burning again here. That's great. 7-3, have a good evening. KL7R, M0HBR.